Thanks for joining us on the Future Food Show. This episode is part of the Transforming the Future of Proteins series, where we explore the work of XPRIZE Feed the Next Billion, a global incentivized competition that challenges innovators to reinvent alternative proteins. On this episode, we're excited to have Robin Simsa of Revo Foods join as our guest. Robin has a PhD in biotechnology from the University of Gothenburg and Tufts University. He's recognized as one of Forbes 30 Under 30 for the DACH region. With a background in biotechnology and a passion for ocean sustainability, Robin has extensive experience in the field of 3D food printing, which he used when building his first startup. Revo Foods has revolutionized the production of plant-based fish alternatives and is currently the largest supplier of salmon alternatives in Europe. We have a great conversation with Robin as we discuss 3D bioprinting technologies for food, what it's like creating a startup, and the opportunities competitions can bring to the table. Robin, I'd like to welcome you to the Future Food Show.
Hey, Alex. Thanks so much for having me.
Robin, tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I actually studied biotechnology as a bachelor. And during this time, I got interested in cultured meat. I remember reading about the career opportunities for biotechnology, and it was mainly big pharma companies and very conventional career paths, let's say, and it didn't interest me that much. But then I was actually reading about the first cultured meat hamburger that Mark Post was producing in his laboratory, and that got me hooked. And I thought, like, this is exactly the way where I want to develop my career to. And then luckily, I found a PhD position where I was able to work together with Professor David Kaplan from Tufts University as part of my PhD. And ever since, I've been on the track of trying to create better meat alternatives.
Excellent. And so what is Revo Foods and how did you start it?
Well, right after doing my PhD, I was thinking, okay, how can I contribute to this this area? And I had a colleague who was actually working in bioprinting. And we were discussing for a long time about whole cut products. So things like the steak or the fish fillet. And we were thinking that there are not really technologies right now available to us to produce these types of products. And my colleague was saying, well, actually, with this 3D bioprinting approach, this was made to recreate complex tissue structures or organ structures in this case. Why wouldn't it work for something like a piece of muscle? So just for fun, basically in the beginning, we said, okay, let's try to print something that looks like a sushi. We tried this for some days, like on the side, and within really short time, we got really, really good results. And this was the time when we said, okay, additive food manufacturing or 3D food printing can have a real benefit for these meat alternatives, for creating the next generation of these meat alternatives. And this was the starting point of Revo Foods a bit more than 3 years ago.
Tracking back a little bit, you mentioned whole cut, right? And we know that the XPRIZE challenge, the Feed the Next Billion challenge, which, you know, maybe we'll get into a little bit more later, focuses on whole cut chicken or fish products. I wanted to ask you why you think whole cut is important.
I believe you'll need a bit more differentiated products on the market. Like right now, I feel we have quite good hamburgers, quite good chicken nuggets or fish sticks, like in our case now. But what we're really missing is a bit more differentiation on the product side. So people that say, I love the taste of a good steak, or I love the taste of a good fish fillet. Those are not some grinded processed products, but those are really very difficult, heterogeneous and complex products. And recreating this complexity, I think, will lead the whole field forward, because you need to think about new fiber solutions. You need to think about new fat solutions, about new solutions to bring the best flavor right into the products and in different compartments of the products. So there's a whole array of challenges that I believe are unique to these types of products, but also can create really the next level where you reach more of the average consumers, let's say.
Is the differentiation also why you chose to focus on fish?
I think with fish, we have massive challenges as well as with meat products, I mean, conventional meat products. in terms of overfishing, etc. And not many people have been doing this in the past. Now there's some more new companies coming up working on these types of products. But I believe this is really a young market where there can be a lot more solutions, and the solutions that are available also need to get a lot better, including our own.
Would you say that the team might be interested in going to kind of, chicken or beef in the future?
Yeah, could be. I'm thinking a lot about mystery products, like half fish taste, half beef steak or something like this, or like creating something that is actually completely new. Because especially with this 3D printing technology, you can get very creative and you can create really new structures and textures that people are not used to that much. And I think that something like this might even be the future of these types of products.
Yeah, I think that is always so exciting. And I remember, you know, we were talking to one of the earlier episodes was with Ali Bouzari, and he was telling us about, you know, how these types of designer meats could be very interesting from a culinary perspective. But we haven't seen it too much, right? I think the only company who has announced that they're doing something like that in the, I guess, alternative protein space might be a Vow from Australia, kind of mixing like quail and lobster or something like that. I know that this is not officially what, you know, your company is working on, but maybe what would be kind of an interesting direction that you would like to take, like right off the top of your head? What would you like to see mixed together?
I was thinking it today, like maybe it's a stupid thing, but only playing with the form and making some kind of hipster mini salmon fillets that are shaped in a triangle or this other typical funny shapes that people like these tiny foods, for example, or creating something which looks like a salmon fillet, but actually tastes like a tuna, which is a little bit confusing. But I like concepts like this, like changing the way people actually think about what food can do for them and how, like, what new things we could create with technology like this. But we it's really a challenge creatively, I believe, to come up with something new, because it's easier to say, okay, salmon fillet exists in the world, we make a salmon fillet. It's harder to say, think of something that didn't exist before, how could it look like? This requires a lot of like imaginative power, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, only so much market research, or market research can only get you so far, right? for that type of thing.
Very true, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but that's really exciting. And I do feel like that is the future of things. I wanted to ask you, and I want to get into the technology a little bit as well, but tell us a little bit about, you know, where you're located, where the team is located, how big is the team, and what is your latest, I guess, public funding round?
Sure. So we're located in Austria, in Vienna, the capital, which is a country that has no sea access. And we're developing the fish of the future, as we like to say, which is a bit ironic in its own, I think. We could grow our team quite well, I believe. We're now about 40 team members here at our headquarters. Yeah, we have now 4 products that we launched in the market. We're in more than 1,000 locations across Europe, including the German Rewe Group, which is one of the biggest supermarket chains in Europe. And we're present in 20 countries already with our first product. So I think we had quite a good success in a pretty short period of time.
Wow. And when you were kind of doing your PhD, were you thinking, hey, I'm going to start a company?
Not specifically. I knew I want to stay in this field. And in the beginning, I also wanted to stay in cell-based meat specifically. However, then working with it, I have a lot of respect for everybody that is operating in this space. Because for me personally, I just was so overwhelmed with the complexity of it that I said to myself, okay, maybe in plant-based, I can have more midterm solutions ready, while I also believe and hope that something like cultured meat in a bit more longer run probably can have potentially the bigger impact even.
Do you think that your team might transition to that in the future, or are you just focused on plant-based from now on?
It might be, to be honest. I think adding certain proteins to the products or fat parts, something like this, I think has a lot of value. So if you think about myoglobin or hemoglobin, something that Impossible Foods has famously done very successfully, I think there can be more proteins like this, or also flavor molecules. I'm wondering if it is necessary to add fat cells, for instance, to our products, like cultured fat, or if it might even be enough to identify certain surface molecules that are present on fat cells and attach to certain flavor receptors on your tongue. And if some, an addition like this would give you a very nice fatty feeling. And I think we're just at the start of this, these new developments that are basically incorporated in precision fermentation. And I think a lot new solutions can come from this, actually.
I see. So, for example, adding different types of proteins that come through precision fermentation, or maybe even adding different types of fats that come through cultured fat technology. Is that right?
I think so. And what I've been thinking about for a long time was like actin and myosin, like the proteins which lead to meat being sticky, and being sticky when you bite on it and chew it and everything. This is a behavior that basically no plant-based product that I have encountered so far has. You get it a little bit with gluten, but in a very low extent. And if you could find a way to find some kind of a natural glue almost, where you have the sticky behavior, I think this makes a lot of difference. And there's many other examples like this, for example, that where a little effect can have a massive difference on the experience of the consumer.
Well, we should talk more about that offline, but I wanted to tell you about, I wanted to ask you, do you know of anybody making like cell cultured fish fat? Do you know of anybody working on that?
Fish fat, I'm not 100% sure. I mean, in Europe, there's not too many companies working on cell-based fish in general. I know Blue Bioscience from Germany, very nice guys, for example. And I mean, in the US, there are famously some like Finless Foods and others, but fat specifically, I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah, that would be interesting. I mean, I feel like we're always talking about, you know, every single thing you could think of, but, you know, that might be that is... Well, I guess, you know, the companies that are focused on that, they're not just doing fat, they're doing a little bit of everything.
I mean, an interesting question, I don't know the answer to it, but like how different are certain fat cells between species, no? Because there's certain molecules and proteins which are very conserved between species, while others, like, they vary quite a bit. So there could be a question, okay, if you take fat cells from salmon and fat cells from tuna and you cultivate them, is there actually a perceivable difference, or does it not matter? Or even if you take between salmon and, let's say, beef or something. Maybe a cell biologist would now call me stupid because the answer is obvious, but I just don't know it. And it might be that there's not that much difference after all, but that the important properties that you want are quite conserved between species.
Yeah, well, on this podcast, we never get too deep into the science. So if there is somebody listening that's saying like, hey, you guys are totally off, you know, you're going to have to drop something in the comments or send us a message, because, you know, it'll be a good talking point.
yeah, please hit me up if somebody knows the answer, because I will be really interested in this.
So Robin, you said that you have been listening to the Cultured Meat and Future Food podcast, and that's a huge honor. Do you remember how you first heard about it?
I mean, I think you were one of the first to start a podcast in this spectrum. And I remember when I got interested in this whole cultured meat thing, that was, I think, in 2015. And I'm not even sure if Beyond Meat was already a thing back then, or Impossible Foods or company like this. And I think there were like three or four cultured meat companies in the world. And I remember applying to all of them for like internship positions, and all of them rejected me, unfortunately. And then I was out of options. Now that would be quite different in these times, but because there's so many more companies. But yeah, I think you reached really right timing, and I think it's very important to build a community around these kind of things. And I think that podcasts such as yours also have a big influence on, let's say, young students or young people who think, okay, where can I take my career? What should I do? And maybe founding new companies or choosing a academic career in this kind of field. And something like this is very important to get the word out and show people, look, this is exciting new technology and something that you can do with your life.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, and there were only a handful of companies, and I think that's when we spread to different types of, like, you know, plant-based proteins or even insect-based proteins. I'm glad we did, because now we're starting to see so many different types of technologies and companies blend together. That is definitely very interesting.
There's a lot more to report on, for sure, yes, but also more to see, okay, what is real and what is really new and what is maybe has been done before.
So a lot of people that are in academia right now, either in an undergraduate program or you know, gearing towards a PhD program, they're oftentimes thinking in this type of work climate, you know, do I go the route of working for industry, or should I try to start a company or join a company, specifically a startup? I wanted to ask you, you know, what advice do you have for them? What made you kind of really excited to go that route? And I'll follow up about kind of the entrepreneurial mindset. But first, I kind of wanted to ask you, you know, what advice do you have for those that are in academia and deciding to go industry or startup?
First of all, I think there's a huge benefit also in academia, and it's very valuable, and it can be very a nice thing to do also. Like, I enjoyed very much doing a PhD in this field, and I think we actually need more of this basic research also, because many of the companies operating in this field, like, they don't have interest to share information. And if some of these companies, God forbid, but if some of them maybe go under, then this knowledge might be lost, and that would be a bit of a shame. However, if people choose to go into the industry or make their own startup, I think it only makes sense to start your own startup if you really have a good idea that is differentiated and not there yet. If you just do it because you say, I want to start a company, like, that's my main goal, you can still achieve something and you can learn a lot. But for us, it was really seeing like a unique new technological approach to a problem that, in our opinion, back then people had not considered before. That was really the starting point.
Do you think that maybe back when you were applying to those jobs, if one of them had said, you know, yes, then you might have never started Revo Foods?
Yeah, 100%. I think then I might be now at, I don't know, Hoover, these companies like Upside Foods or Mosa Meats and people like that. Who knows? Maybe.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned that you have a product line currently in Reva, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
How is that experience like getting into retail grocery? And for those who are listening in the US, Reva is pretty much a very big chain. They have smaller stores and bigger stores all throughout, I guess, you know, Europe, but specifically Germany and I believe Austria as well. Mm-hmm. And fill in for anything I might have missed, but you know, how was that experience?
Sure. So Reva is actually, I think, the second or the third biggest retailer in Europe. So they have quite some presence across different countries, which is nice for us. And we actually got into it by participating in the Austrian version of Shark Tank. So like a TV show where we pitched our products and our idea. And Reva was one of the sponsors of these shows. So this was quite a success. So we were lucky. I don't know how to call it. And then next year, actually, we were in the German kind of version of Shark Tank and then also got into the German Reva stores. So I think participating in TV shows has been very successful for us, because people say, okay, you do what? You do 3D printing of vegan fish. Like, both of these individually sound already a bit strange, but combining them somehow for people are really, really bizarre. And this makes for some good media attention, I guess.
Yeah. What is the name of the Austrian Shark Tank?
Here it's called, like, the translation would be 2 minutes, 2 million, but you don't get 2 million. Nobody does. It's just,
okay,
it's a good name for them, I guess.
And the German one has something to do with lions, right? What is that one called?
Yeah, or there it was like the translation would be the tastiest idea of Germany. So it's more like you're in like competition with other startups for who has the tastiest breakfast idea or lunch idea or something like this.
I see. Okay, cool. And so the products that are in those stores right now, they are completely made with 3D printing technology?
So the products that we have in store right now, those are like our early products, let's say. So we developed them with the 3D printer, that is true. However, for them, those are more like, say, 2D products. So we have salmon slices, which is like a single layer of product. And there we found another like a bit more easy solution, let's say, to produce it. And we saw that we don't necessarily need this complex 3D printing approach to it. And we have some cream cheese spreadable products like a tuna spread and a salmon spread. So those are not yet the products produced with a final technology. However, with this, we will release the salmon fillet, which we have been now working on for 3 years, quite soon, actually, still this year.
Okay, great. And I guess I wanted to ask you about what scale up looks like when it comes to developing products with 3D technologies, right? Is it, you know, a warehouse or a facility full of 3D printers, or and maybe we have some examples of existing technologies today that we can reference, but what does it look like to scale 3D printing technology?
Sure. And I need to be a bit careful on how I explain this. But basically, what you need to think about is that many 3D printing operations, they were batch processes in the past. They're used for prototyping and they need to be refilled quite a lot. So this was one of the challenges. And what we target is an upscaled industrial version of this additive food manufacturing. So what this requires is basically a continuous flow of material to the print heads, to the extruders, and automatic transport of final products forward, which is something that normally you don't have in the additive manufacturing industry. Normally what you have is things called print farms, for example, where you have indeed many printers in parallel, which is especially used for plastics. And then another thing is that 3D food printing has been mainly used as a gimmick so far. What I mean by this is that people can buy, for instance, some desktop machines. There's some companies that offer them, and then chefs can use them in a restaurant, for example, or you can make cool and funky structures or print on a cake, like the picture of for a wedding or something like this. However, we strongly believe that even apart from meat alternatives, that additive food manufacturing can have massive implications for the wider food industry. For the first time, you can allow people to have a flexible and personalized production. What I mean by this is that current food production is based on massive volumes and massive batch numbers. Let's say a pasta company, they have a certain pasta form and they produce it tons and tons every day. It doesn't allow personalization. But there's a big market for people who actually want something that is personalized to their needs or for a special event or in a flexible way that you can produce things where every single piece is a little bit different than the other one. For instance, to make something appeal or look more natural, for example. Things like this are a bit niche applications, but I still believe that in all areas of industrial manufacturing, we see this trend towards personalized and flexible production. But in food, hardly yet. And this is one of the few technologies where we can finally achieve something like this also in food operations.
So perhaps you could actually shift a lot of the current food manufacturing process by not just creating your own products, but developing new technologies with 3D printing, this kind of large-scale 3D printing technology.
Mm. For this, I think for many products, it doesn't make sense. Let's say you have the typical spaghetti, pasta. It will never make sense to 3D print something like this, most likely. However, for certain applications, for instance, very interesting but structurally complex products with crazy shapes, crazy structures. You want the Eiffel Tower out of chocolate. You want, I don't know what, you want the Statue of Liberty out of some bakery good. Things like this. Very complex to produce with conventional methods if you want to make it really complex looking. But for applications like this, where people you would expect normally pay quite a bit of a premium, 3D food printing would actually be perfect. Or things like, said this, personalized nutrition. I was just recently talking actually with an elderly home here in Vienna where they experimented a little bit with 3D food printing to dissolve basically the medication of the patients in the food. And now imagine you have a system where you just type 10 patients and they all need different medication, and you have a printer where you can adjust the concentration of different medications directly into the food. I mean, now we speak about 5, 10, maybe even 15 years of development time for something like this. But I think in the midterm future, something like this are real interesting applications.
That is very interesting and much more, focused and meaningful than, you know, just being able to have like a bread maker equivalent in the everyday home where everyone can just, you know, 3D print what they want. So, okay, that is very interesting. I wanted to talk to you about XPRIZE. How did your team first hear about the Feed the Next Billion challenge?
I think I read somewhere in a newsletter or something about it, and I thought it's perfect for us. Like, we need to participate in this. And I didn't even think we would be considered because we were still a very young startup. We didn't have like our first prototype ready, and we just applied opportunistically, let's say. And then we're really happy to be selected for the next round. We even got a little bit of money. I think it was like 10 or 15,000 US dollar at this time. And the task was to develop a fish fillet. In our case, we chose a salmon fillet. And we said, okay, now we have a year and we need to come up with a prototype. And at this time, we were actually focused on some other types of product applications, more or less. And then XPRIZE really accelerated our work towards this first salmon fillet prototype. And in hindsight, it was super useful for us because I think we wouldn't have been that fast in developing it if it wasn't for this specific purpose and for this specific deadline.
You know, you already mentioned that it accelerated your timeline. I wanted to ask you, when you first applied to XPRIZE, that was before the, you know, the Shark Tank style TV shows?
Yeah, right.
That's correct. Okay, yeah. And so, you know, in the past, we've seen that teams that are part of XPRIZE challenges, even if they're not the ultimate winners of the challenge, they still have huge opportunities that come to them. You've already mentioned that XPRIZE itself has accelerated your timelines and done a lot of great things for you. But as a semifinalist and beyond, what do you think the XPRIZE challenge could do for you, whether you are a winner at the end of the day or not?
I mean, first of all, obviously the prize is very attractive. Like they were very successful in fundraising for this prize, I think. And it's, the total prize money is 15 million US dollar. That winners can gain, which is, of course, a big incentive for companies like us to dedicate even more resources towards R&D than we might have done otherwise. And apart from this, of course, like it's a very prestigious event and people know about XPRIZE. I knew about XPRIZE way before we joined this competition. And it's in the news. It is in the... It shows really companies leading in this respective field, I think. So all of this combined is, it's like gold for us. I cannot even say how much we can benefit from something like this and already have possibly.
I love that. Yeah. And that, I guess, is also very inspiring to hear. As we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, earlier I had asked you about academia versus going to industry, and you had some great answers. One thing that I wanted to chat about is the entrepreneurial mindset. Do you feel like you always had the entrepreneurial mindset, or did you have to kind of learn it and grow with it?
I feel I had it more than the academic mindset, because as an academic, you go into depth everywhere you you take your time, you look more for process than getting quick to a final result, maybe. While at least for me personally, I think it's important to analyze very quickly what is important to get us to the next step. What do we need now the most? Even can we take shortcuts here and there in terms of like that we develop something a bit quicker and yeah, things like this. And I think this is something important because at the end, what you don't have in startups is time. Like you don't have endless time to develop something, to bring something on the market, because this is a big company's game. And as a startup, like the big advantage that you have is speed, I believe. And then this must be used as good as possible.
And how did you find your co-founder?
Actually, we were working together on some, in the 3D printing area, like also 3D bioprinting, and working on projects together already before. And then we said, hey, I would really like to do something in this area. And then, yeah, we kind of joined forces.
I want to ask you about kind of like the creative and visual design of, you know, Revo Foods. Can you speak to maybe the decisions to kind of go that creative route? And I'll say, with somebody that has a background in design, I do like the approach that you guys have taken.
So for people that don't know our brand, like Revo Foods, you can look it up. We work a lot with creative artists and illustrationists and street artists, actually. And this was my main approach from the beginning. I wanted a brand that is colorful, happy, inspiring, and stands a bit out. Because if you go now to the supermarket shelves and look for smoked salmon, for example, the packages are mainly either only blue or pictures of the Norwegian mountains. But it's not really that inspiring. And we invited some really creative street artists, I think. One actually American street artist that lives here in Vienna that is amazing, Deadbeat Hero. Or also a Bosnian street artist that was creating amazing art on Instagram that we saw, and we were like, hey, that fits perfectly with our brand also. And we invited them to make the cover design for our packages, actually, and also for the rest of our brand identity. And this is a route that we will continue because it's, at the end, it's fun. And I think there's often not a right or wrong decision in terms of branding, like, okay, which color should we choose now, which this and that. I mean, sometimes there is, but often it's just like, okay, what do we like as a team the most and in which direction do we want to go? And we chose this colorful, happy, creative approach.
That's cool. And I also like how there's merch that you can buy on the site. So
yeah, we sell t-shirts.
Hoodie, a t-shirt, yeah.
So far we sold 3 t-shirts, I think, since we started the shop 2 years ago. So it's not the most successful endeavor for us. But
You know, if you're listening and you're in Europe, you know, or if you ship to the US, please buy 1 t-shirt. I know I will. So, you know, with our listeners and me, you'll get at least 1 or 2 t-shirts sold.
Yeah. Then my mother is not the only customer anymore. Yeah. But it's also okay. It was just a try.
Right. Oh, man, that's cool. You could learn more about Revo Foods at revo-foods.com. You could learn more and connect with Robin on LinkedIn. Robin, I wanted to ask you if you have any last insights for our listeners today.
Sure. Can I also promote something?
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead.
Nice. I mean, like everyone, we're fundraising, always fundraising. So if somebody is interested in this new process technology that we developed and where we now have 2 patents on, please reach out to me on LinkedIn or via email. And also we're constantly hiring people. I mean, especially with background in plant-based meats, ideally, or 3D food printing or process technology, this is something we're always on the lookout. So they are also feel free to contact me, please.
Awesome. Well, Robin, thank you so much for being a guest on the Future Food Show.
Thank you so much. It was great.
This is your host, Alex, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.